This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics will be giving all eligible Australians the opportunity to express their view on whether Australian marriage laws should be changed to allow same-sex couples to marry. Survey forms will be sent to all eligible Australians on the Commonwealth electoral roll. To participate, you must be enrolled. To enrol, check or update your details, visit the AEC website, search AEC or visit an AEC office. The roll closes Thursday, August 24. Authorised by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Canberra. Spoken by Jake Downs.
Joy sponsor.
This is where your geek worlds collide, from tech, gadgets, sci-fi, horror, comics, and anything else that gets your geek motor running. Your hosts are myself, Clayton Claytalks Wimshurst, Michael Strauss.
Add a middle name, make one up.
What would you like?
Milton
Strauss, I'm not sure it works. Milhouse, maybe.
Milhouse.
And Mark, I don't even know how to say your last name.
Oh, it's Pounny.
Pounny. Okay, that's easy.
Pounders to some.
Pounders?
Mark Pounders Pounny.
That sounds very dirty.
To whom?
He knows if he's listening, which I'm pretty sure he's
right.
Just saying.
Hello. So.
and actually, we have somebody else online.
Oh, of course. Sorry, I completely forgot because we can't see you. You're invisible.
That's right.
Live from New Zealand.
That's right.
We have... Rainy, I don't know your last name actually.
Rainer.
Let's make one
Rainer,
up for
sorry.
Let's make one up for Rainer.
Rainer Rainy, because I just got it wrong.
She's the voice in our ears.
She is.
Yes.
It's great to be actually using technology to be part of the technology and geek and nerd show.
It is. It's a pity when we get it wrong.
Yes.
Of course, Rainer's all the way over in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So
2 hours later,
the optic fibres are hard at work trying to get bring her to the
the optic fibres.
So yeah, there's time travel as well because she's 2 hours ahead of us. Yes, so
Can you tell me who wins the 5 o'clock race then?
It's in that almanac I gave you that time. You know the one.
Yes.
All right. So Michael, why on earth are you on a show about technology and pop culture and sci-fi and horror and all sorts of things?
Because you couldn't keep me off air. Actually, no, you have kept me off air. This is the AA part of the show, isn't it? Where we go through and we confess. Well, my confession is, forgive me, because it's really been 679 days since I've been on air last.
Who actually did the counting? Was it you? Or?
No, a computer did. Okay. I hope it's right. And that was, of course, with Technogaze.
Yes. So.
And you might recognise my voice and Mark's and Raina's voice from those days.
So 600 and something days ago.
And I have digressed. I have fallen off the wagon. I've been back on the wagon again because I crossed over onto the dark side. I got rid of my Android phone and I actually used an iPhone for about a month and a half.
This is Confessions of Technogaze. Of Technogaze era anyway.
But I saw the error of my ways and I threw out the iPhone. I'm back on Android and I feel so much better for it.
Those little messages, that brief period of time where my messages were going through and they came up blue. And I was like,
Michael's fine, yes.
How long did you last?
About a month and a half. I can't stand the notifications. There's nothing worse than you read an email and then up pops the notification saying, oh, you've got another email.
You do know you can turn that off.
But then you get no notifications. Why can't it be Android-style notifications?
Well, Raina?
No, I'm just wondering what on earth could have happened then if you don't want notifications.
I suspect as well it might have been an older version of iOS.
No, it was the most recent. Sorry, it wasn't the beta one, but it was the most recent production version.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Anyway,
So that's my confession. What about you, Mark? What have you got to confess?
I have much the same confession, of course, because, you know.
How many
days was it?
You jumped off iOS.
Oh, no. I have not done that. although, you know, I've embraced more of the Microsoft ecosystem for laptops. You know, I'm Windows 10.
Windows.
On one of my machines. Yeah.
Anyway. Not on your phone, though.
No.
Why is that?
Because they don't really make a Windows operating system for the phone anymore.
So really the choices these days are Apple iOS, Google's Android, and of course, BlackBerry.
You're still on BlackBerry.
He's still on that bandwagon.
What can I say?
Is it, does it even exist anymore? I don't think there are BlackBerries anymore. Are they?
I'm sure there are.
Sure, yeah, yes.
Apparently they're making a comeback, I heard recently. Mark, why are you on a technology etc. show?
I know things about technology,
that's,
I guess.
Nice. That's nice.
I love joy. That's a good reason to be on a tech show, right?
Also good, yes.
I used to be, as Michael just suggested, along with Rainer and Michael and a couple other people. We used to do TechnoGaze many, many moons ago. So, you know.
679, to be precise.
Well,
hey, not moons.
Not moons.
No, sleeps.
Days.
Sleeps. Yeah, days. Sleeps.
Okay, so, well, myself, since no one asked. I could ask Rainer first. Sorry, Rainer, you go first.
Why am I on a show? You know what? I'll tell you how I got on this show originally is because TechnoGaze was looking for some guests, and I'm interested in things like gaming and stuff. I'm a web developer, but at the moment I'm actually working in a slightly different sector, and the voluntary not-for-profit kind of sectors, and my gosh, hasn't that been a change from what I used to do?
Yeah.
Holy dooly.
Does it? Are you still doing the web thing there?
Yeah, doing lots of social media and stuff, and it really does just make such a difference when you're working for a large organisation to going to a very small member driven one. You know, trying to get people motivated, and of course there are a lot of people living remotely in New Zealand that our organisation can't always reach. Mm. So it's a lot of responsibility. It's great fun though.
But it is making that connection between technology and people, which is what we love, as well as, I guess, the other part of this iteration, Geeks Out, is, of course, there's sci-fi involved in all this. And there's a cross-section of people, right? Like, a lot of people who are in the technology industry also like sci-fi, it's fair to say.
Why is that?
I was looking at Clayton, no. Maybe.
Well, I was really surprised that I ran into two tech guys at Joy, and neither of them are into sci-fi or other horror or...
Gasp.
I know.
Is that even...
I'm into sci-fi, but on the edges, not as... I don't know, deep as you.
What defines a... I like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I like Babylon 5. We're
really?
Going to confession time now.
Oh, sorry, Mark. Mark's leaving now. Goodbye.
Well, Babylon 5 was an amazing, like, for its day. And if you like Sense8 today, then, that was by JMS, who executive producer was JMS, I think, who did the production of Babylon 5 as well. So,
well, a lot of Sense8 is the Wachowski sisters, yeah.
And the Wachowskis, yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, the Wachowskis. So, I think the connection is that sci-fi tends to be the speculative stuff for tech geeks. So they actually get to project into the future and actually see it in action through the shows.
Yes, and the great thing, even looking for topics this week, right, on what we're kind of talk about, there's a lot of intercept between... Like, we went and saw Terminator 2 mm-hmm. 3D, like a preview screening, didn't we?
That's up for next week.
And we'll talk about that in more detail next week. But... The brilliant thing about that movie is there's a lot of stuff that you can kind of see actually has happened by now, you know, and they've talked about it being in the future, but you can actually see parallels. It might not be perfectly aligned with what reality is, but there's so much to be said for sci-fi writers and sci-fi stories that have actually come true. And it's interesting, I think the question we should always be asking is whether it's whether sci-fi is predicting the future or if it's defining the future, right?
I think, needless to say, the more, I guess, deep prop heads or propeller heads that are really into the technology don't have the imagination necessarily to come up with some ideas, ideas, and that sci-fi does lead into it, because sci-fi is, for many, many years has been leading, you know, what we can do today to be eventually we can do. So if you look at Dick Tracy going back to the early 30s with the watch phone, look at today, we have the watch phone.
But like Star Trek, the original flip phones were based on the Star Trek communicators, so it really is like it is leading the future rather than just speculating it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's some elements, like it depends on the design team that made the flip phone. Did they base it on that? Probably they
That's
did.
That's what I heard. But
and yes, but there's others obviously that just sort of happen that way as well, like Skynet kind of capabilities that are being built into Google or whatever, you know, the fact that they're tracking everything that we do, or, you know, there's all sorts of AI implications that are happening now. Like, people, like, there's companies out there developing these capabilities into the IT systems that is kind of, when you just take a little step back, you kind of realise it really does, you know, lead us down the path of some interesting times, put it that way.
Margaret Atwood's wonderful book, The Handmaid's Tale, which is probably not wonderful, it's probably the wrong word, has just been made into a TV series, but Margaret Atwood actually avoids using the word sci-fi and uses speculative fiction to define her work.
Yes.
Her other series, which is also very speculative future fiction, is Oryx and Crake.
I read that recently.
Really?
It took a while to get into it, but it was really, really good.
I often define that as my favourite book, actually. Yep. So, but the whole series is great, and I really would love to see a TV series out of that. But Trump has gone ahead and brought a lot of the things from The Handmaid's Tale into our actual vision rather than just in our imaginations.
Well, that was the thing that that Atwood always says about that book, and always said about that book even when she wrote it, and it was released in the 80s. You know, she hasn't written about anything that hasn't already happened or is happening today.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a wonderful
author. That's unsettling, isn't it?
Definitely.
When people go, oh, but Trump, you know, and yeah, that's true. It's you sort of see these things from Trump, or you see these things in repressive regimes or whatever happening now, and they go, oh, The Handmaid's Tale's coming true. It's already happened. Yeah. It's unsettling, isn't it?
Very unsettling, and it's so close to what the truth actually is. To get back to me, not to make it about me, but I haven't really introduced myself yet.
Confessions of
my confession time. I am an alum from Sci-Fi and Scream. I was a regular, and then I became a co-host on the Undead series. And I need to throw out a very big, massive thank you to Sonia Hammer, who has paved my way into becoming very much a on-air geek nerd, not just a off-air geek nerd. And I recently actually got to speak at the Queer Expo about nerd issues, and I had a really great time with that.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic. So, I've got a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
Where does Claytox come from?
Well, Claytox actually comes from just a random nickname that somebody gave to me at some point. And it was originally it was Claytox Teacher of the Universe, which I'm a teacher, but I don't really... Anyway, so, and it just kind of seemed to fit with Sci-Fi and Scream, so we kind of just ran with it. So
I picture it as just being like an IRC nickname or something.
Yeah,
like
or an STI.
Actually, I thought it was a typo, but... And do your students know about that name?
Some not. Yeah, actually, because when they connect to my phone, when they use my Wi-Fi off my phone because the school one's not working, it does say Claytox's iPhone. So
they must like that.
Yeah, they do. Mm. Yeah. I am a technology teacher a lot of ways, and I used to be the ICT teacher at the school. And, you know, and I think there's a future where I'll probably be the ICT teacher again. So I'm definitely connected with the tech side, but definitely not as strong as you guys.
One of the things that I'm looking forward to with the show is for the times when Mark Rayner and I may say something and then you turn around and say, hang on a minute, what does that mean? Mm. Because very often we assume that, you know, everybody knows what we're talking about, when in fact, that's not the case.
And that's happened in our programming and development, and it's going, guys, I don't know what that means. Can someone tell me? So yeah. I am going to be your voice on air to try and get them to calm down and tell us in English.
Now, of course, if you want to have a voice on air, you can contact us via SMS at 0427JOY949.
Or you can email onair@joy.org.au.
Or you can 0427JOY949. Did we do that one already?
We did.
Okay, sorry, I was distracted by something. You can message 1300JOY949. Have we done that?
You have now.
I have now.
Now, okay. if you call that number, 1300JOY949, Neil will answer the phone.
Yes, thank you. And the reason I got distracted is we've had our first message already. So, oh my God. So excited to geek out with our favourite geeks, Clayton, Michael, and co-love Gina. So,
thank
you.
You are listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
We've actually labelled that one most annoying, I think. Was that,
No, that's not the most annoying.
Sorry, okay. Yet. There's more annoying ones to come. thank you so much to Michael for preparing those. You are listening to Clayton, Rayner, Michael and Mark on Geeks Out, which...
Can we come up with an acronym with letters?
Probably, yeah.
Actually, C... we'll use your last name in the end, Mark.
C-R-E-M, yeah.
Bless.
All right. So you have found some stuff about Google, Michael.
Well, Google has been in the news recently for probably not the right reasons.
Yeah.
No.
There's been a A manifesto written by an intern, a Googler.
An employee of Google.
Now ex-employee of Google, I think it is. Which we thought, you know, it's interesting because, so his name is James Damore. He was fired by Google for suggesting that women are less suited to certain roles in tech and leadership, and he's now actually considering to whether to take legal action against Google. He was fired because he violated their code of conduct and crossed the line by advancing harmful gender stereotypes. But some of the suggestions, I mean, you might have seen the stories because it was actually pretty prominent in some of the mainstream media outlets. He suggested that the company would make what did he say? Putting people in women in tech and leadership positions.
What he suggested was to get more women involved, that we should be making leadership less stressful because women are on average more prone to anxiety.
Sorry, have she never met men? Donut.
Sorry, Raina.
Yes.
What an absolute goose. I've read this memo. I don't know. Have you guys actually read the memo?
I've read parts of it.
Because it's actually fully available. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I sort of had to stop and you know,
stop hyperventilating.
Fix my eyes up from rolling them so hard. You could practically hear it. But it was basically, you know, basically there are lots of reasons that aren't related to bias. They're about why women aren't there, blah, 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 blah. It's crap. It's crap and unscientific.
Yeah, there's no necessarily scientific method to any of the assertions that he made in the manifesto. And besides, like, the assertions could be questionable as to whether that, you know, is a reason not to include women in leadership positions in the first place. Like, there's two. Like, if you were to look at it purely on an arguments basis, you'd sort of look at it and go, well, A, the basis, the arguments themselves are incorrect, and B, the arguments used, using those arguments to support the overall point of view that there shouldn't be women in leadership positions are also invalid.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that he goes on to say, you know, like, he's using all this as a big basis for him going, well, you know, I think we should get rid of all these discriminatory practices, as he calls them, like programs or mentoring or whatever, only for people of a certain gender or race. Mm. And, you know, treating, he always scare quotes, diversity candidates, you know. I mean,
yeah, and
this is
those
gross.
Types of programs exist, right? Because there is such a discrepancy in diversity. It's purely on that basis. Like, if you look at the numbers, you look at there's pay gap issues, but there's also like, if you look at the number of people
basic representation,
females versus males, or any other gender identifier. Yeah, I mean, there's been studies done around Silicon Valley as a whole, because Google is obviously on the west coast of the US.
In Silicon Valley.
And so it's kind of held up as being, you know, one of the bastions of, you know, along with Apple and along with
Facebook.
Facebook and Microsoft as well, perhaps would be considered up there. But there has been some numbers published around what Google's workforce is made up of, and it's borne out by 69% of their workforce is male, right? So there's already a discrepancy. And that in itself is a reason to be supporting the processes that are needed to have employees that are of female gender.
Yeah.
Or non-male gender, perhaps.
So what Damore's basically saying is, I don't believe in affirmative action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've seen in the past that affirmative action does work and does contribute positively to an environment.
And it's to do with dealing with people's prejudice. These hirings are actually based on the assumptions people make about who other people are. And so that's why we need these, in order to make sure that we get a really good range of people in jobs.
The really insidious thing about it all is those prejudices actually, in my opinion, are borne out in a way that is not explicit. Like, you're not necessarily explicitly saying, I'm not going to choose that person because they're a woman. You're making judgments internally. Like, if you're actually hiring someone, you're actually internalizing the thought process or whatever into deciding against it. And that's typically the reason why any diverse person is you know, restricted from gaining employment in that sort of space.
Because you tend to hire in the like of you, and if your mindset is, this is who I am, this is what I like, then you will just keep on hiring the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of the pay gap with people in tech jobs, this is not just particularly Google, this is across the board. Between the ages of 18 and 25, the gender pay gap in technology, and this is from comparably.com, is 29% at that age. That actually drops down to 5% in people who are 50 and over. Mm. So the gender pay gap is sort of, it actually does decrease over time, people who get more assured in their job, I would assume.
Right, yeah.
But yeah. Until people have the right, have enough confidence to fight for their rights.
Mm. But you know, one of the things that I guess...
If they haven't dropped out to begin with, the other thing that people don't always notice with assessments like that going, well, oh, over the age of such and such, the salary is going to be about the same, they're not always taking into account the overall time thing of women not getting as much super as men. And that's something that's actually been in the news quite a lot lately, that women will generally retire with maybe 50%, in some cases, less super than men.
Yeah, because the gap does, as Clayton said, it does close as they get older, but that doesn't mean that it's not equalising,
yeah.
And it's not even more, so it doesn't allow you to obtain more super, like if you in a country like Australia where superannuation is embedded in our pays and the facilitation of services beyond our employment, that still, you've got a very large gap still in the total nest egg that you've got for retirement, which...
It doesn't take into account the retention of women compared to men as well. So how many of women over 50 are left in those jobs?
Yeah, and if they're in those jobs, what sort of jobs are they doing? Or, you know, what is anyone over the age of 50 at the moment in technology doing? A lot of the time I'd suggest to you it's probably management.
Mm. Mm. And this is actually
where the tech skills maybe aren't as important.
Yeah, this is quite a touchy subject, particularly for Google, because they have been the subject of an investigation by the US Department of Labor. Accusing them, the company of systematically discriminating against women, and the general stats against them on just employment basis. You know, there's only 2% of the population. The hirees at Google are African American as well. So it's obviously, you know, pretty top order issue, and the response from Google when this manifesto was published externally was interesting in that effect, because they basically went hard on it. They said, no, we are an all inclusive company. This manifesto does not reflect the company's policy or any of those things.
But their numbers,
by the way, he's fired.
Yeah, but the numbers are so different to that, which is the disappointing thing.
Yeah.
There's been some troubling rumours outside of or coming out of Google as well, is that there are a whole lot of people going, yeah, man, I support you, but they don't, you know, obviously want to say so publicly, which is kind of a bit of a worry, because when you allow things like that to you know, flourish, that just encourages people to keep doing it themselves.
Well, I wonder as well, like, because Google's often sort of presented as, like, being a Silicon Valley company, there is an element of them being very employee-focused, right? So the company does provide benefits to their employees that are, you know, they provide food that's apparently within 150 feet of their workstation, for example. There's free services.
That'd be so bad for me.
Yeah. There's also benefits provided about their freedoms, about employee freedoms. So the company hosts employee forums on each Friday, where there is an examination of the 20 most asked questions that get collated in their systems. There's channels for expression for their employees as well. So, you know, they can communicate their ideas and thoughts. And there's this kind of culture, I think, that's embedded, that allows them to question their management in this manner. Why did that fail here? Why is it that this guy is, you know, going out external and publishing this manifesto to the wider, you know, public, when he could address it in the internal manner? Or
well, it was an internal memo, wasn't it?
It started off like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did it get out into the wider environment? Is the question.
I guess because it obviously is very controversial. Yeah. I would go one step further and ask why is it now that he's running off to all those right wing commentators?
Well, because he gets an ear, something they're willing to listen to him.
Yeah,
but you know he could probably go to anyone for an ear. Why is he going to them? We're talking about people like Stephen Molyneux. We're talking about Jordan B. Peterson, both of whom are massive anti-feminists.
Mm.
Yeah.
And have some pretty virulent followings.
I think you probably answered your question.
Yeah. Ask yourselves that.
Yes. Look, this is a great topic. We hopefully will come back to this sort of topic sometime in the future. Coming up, we have an interview with Al Kossa from the Melbourne International Film Festival. And he's talking about the very nerdy night that's happening tonight. You are on Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
The Melbourne International Film Festival is in full swing at the moment. On the phone, I have Al Kossa, programmer for Melbourne International Film Festival. Al, how are you going?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. How's the festival going so far?
Yeah, we're almost at the midpoint. I mean, MIFF is a complete marathon, I think, you know, for everyone, for audience, for filmmakers, for staff. It's pretty incredible. We're 358 films. It's the 56th MIFF this year. We've got Centerpiece Gala happening tonight. There's kind of a lot going on and a lot going on for next week. So it's, you know, 17 or 18 days with opening.
Are you getting any sleep?
You know, here and there, you're kind of sleeping weirdly. You're definitely eating weirdly at weird times. And, it's all fun, though. Like, you just, I think, feed off the energy and the excitement and anticipation of audiences. And it really does make the city come alive. And, I mean, it's amazing to see it almost become this kind of little tribal thing where you recognize the same groups of people running between cinemas kind of hurriedly 5 to 6 times a day in all different directions. It's quite a joyful thing to see unfold.
Awesome. So tonight you have a sci-fi marathon, which at Geeks Out is going to be our main sort of focus.
Yep.
So what can we expect from that?
Yeah, look, this is the first time MIFF has done an all-night movie marathon. We're co-presenting with the AFTA. So it'll be held at the AFTA Theatre. It starts at 9:30 and it's going to go all the way through, finish between 8 to 9 a.m. It's 630 minutes of films. There's a couple of breaks along the way, but essentially it's part of our major sci-fi retrospective this year. And we thought this is a great year to look at science fiction for any number of reasons. I mean, there's something about 2017 that I think feels particularly kind of dystopian in its character, that it's interesting to kind of build back from. There is, you know, it's a banner kind of headline year for sci-fi as part as, you know, as far as kind of pop culture and the commercial side of kind of sci-fi film goes, with, you know, new Star Wars installments, Alien, Blade Runner, Luc Besson's, you know, Major Valerian, although that's turned out to be a commercial misfire. But it's very interesting to kind of, I think, build back to some of the unseen, underseen, and highly influential kind of classics, you know, with screen films like Atari XC1, Invention for Destruction, which is sort of the first steampunk film and one of the most, I think, the most successful Czech film of all time. And so we have a full retro program of, you know, 10 films. We also, just on Thursday night, had a live score event for Fantastic Planet, co-presented with Hear My Eyes, with Krakatau doing a live score and dialogue kind of re-recording for that. And so the sci-fi marathon is the other special event component of our big sci-fi retro package. And so there's going to be 7 films which are playing, which are kind of to celebrate the cultier, trashier kind of midnight movie angle for science fiction over the years. And it takes in films from the 70s kind of right through to 2000s. So we're playing 7 films. We've included Nacho Vigalongo's Time Crimes, which I think is, you know, become one of the most respected and kind of twisted takes on temporality in terms of time travel movies. And I'm not sure if it's actually ever screened theatrically in Australia as well. It's a very rare chance to see it on the big screen. And obviously this is coming from the filmmaker of Colossal with Anne Hathaway.
Oh, right,
that was released just a month or two ago. And this is really the film that made his name. It's an amazing kind of piece of Spanish sci-fi genre. We've got a lost film that really hasn't been screened anywhere in the world prior to 2015 called Nothing Lasts Forever, which has a lot of Saturday Night Live alumni. It's sort of a lost film from 1984 which is quite a gentle, lovely, very oddball, off-kilter sci-fi parody, which features Dan Aykroyd and also Bill Murray in space. So what is not to like about that? And we've got The Visitor, which is a hilarious kind of film from 1979. It's sort of, I think you'll see a lot of other films reflected in it, films like The Omen and so forth. And it features an extraordinary kind of cast: Sam Peckinpah, John Huston, Glenn Ford, Lance Henriksen. It's an Italian-made film set in Atlanta as the kind of gateway to a sci-fi post-apocalypse. And it was made by an Italian director working under the pseudonym of Michael J. Paradise. It was destroyed by Draft House Films in the States a couple of years back, and it has an incredible reputation as just one of the all-time bonkers midnight movies. We've got A Boy and His Dog by Alfie Jones, which features Don Johnson roaming the post-apocalyptic wasteland with a telepathic dog.
It's a bit of a crazy film.
Certain amount of notoriety to it. And Jones himself was an actor for Peckinpah, and it features Jason Robards as well. It has a degree of influence on George Miller and Mad Max as well. And that's one that will fry your brain at 3 in the morning. Also, I think.
Definitely.
There's Tetsuo the Iron Man, which is, you know, seminal kind of Japanese cyberpunk man-machine piece of visceral extremity. Cronenberg's classic Existenz, and also Brian Trenchard-Smith's Dead and Driving, which is actually an adaptation of a Peter Carey short story called Crabs experiencing its 40th anniversary this year. And so we're also doing a panel in a few days' time called The Tokyo on Film with Overline Journal, where that story first appeared as well. And so we'll be talking through at the Wheeler Center all about, I guess, sci-fi, apocalypse, all kinds of dystopia on screen and literature as well. So I think that's a great kind of add-on event that's a little bit later in the festival too. But Sci-Fi Marathon, it's happening. It's happening all night tonight. It's definitely one to bring 6 coffees and your pajamas along to and have a great time, I think.
I think people are going to need quite a lot of coffee.
I think they will.
There may be some mental coffee happening there as well, though, I think. it's a great mix of films that people would have not seen, but there's also a few in there that people will know quite well and love, like Existenz. Mm-hmm. It's got quite a reasonable release. But the others have had lesser releases in Australia, if at all, so that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, as a queer radio station, we should probably ask you, have you got any queer offerings happening in the next week?
I think we've already had some great queer highlights as part of Myth. We've had Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name, Frances Lee's God of God's Own Country, which I think are two of the films of the year, frankly. Coming up, we've got an amazing film by a filmmaker called Robin Campillo called BPM, which was a winner this year of the Cannes Grand Jury Prize and the Queer Palm winner. And this is, an extraordinary, angry, really kind of absorbing film. It's set in the world of 90s AIDS activism in ACT UP Paris, and it kind of charts a growing relationship between a couple of its members. I was incredibly impressed by this film. It got its first screening with us actually on Sunday the 13th, so coming up tomorrow, and then a repeat later in the week next Friday night. And that's an absolute highlight as I'd see it, definitely. There's also, in our true crime strand actually, we've just missed that. The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson. We've just missed that by a day, I'm afraid. BPM, I think, is going to be an extraordinary film for your listeners and for everyone who loves great film.
Excellent. Just lastly, have you got a pick for the festival to watch in the upcoming days?
One of my favorite films that missed this year is a documentary. It's called Dinah, and it won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance this year. It's a really beautiful love story as well. It's about a titular woman in her 50s who has a variety of mental health challenges. She has Asperger's, but also anxiety and depression, and has had some trauma in her kind of life as well. But she has found love and romance, and she is kind of building up to her marriage and getting that happening. But her and her partner have some kind of physical and some emotional intimacy issues. And this the way I'm describing it might sound quite serious and kind of stony-faced, but it's a hilarious, heartfelt, really lovely film. It's produced by indie film legend Christine Vachon for Killer Films, and Michael Cera actually does the soundtrack, which was kind of interesting to see. It's kind of lovely. It has that, it's a documentary, but it's so well staged and edited. It just has that precision of fiction to it. And it's, yeah, really beautiful, very funny, very lovely kind of unguarded piece of nonfiction storytelling. So I absolutely recommend going and checking that out. And there's one more screening of it next weekend on Sunday.
The Melbourne International Film Festival is on now. You can go to miff.com.au for more information. Al, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
This is Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
What'll it be, boys? And don't ask for Ractogino. If I have to say we don't carry
Who
that one
ordered a Ractogino?
The Klingons.
Klingons?
Over there and over there.
Those are Klingons?
All right. You boys have had enough.
Mr. War?
They are Klingons. And it is a long story.
What happened? Some kind of genetic engineering?
A viral mutation?
We do not discuss it with outsiders.
There are Klingons off the starboard bow. That was a clip from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which is talking about the Klingons' foreheads. And we're going to be seeing some more Klingon foreheads very soon.
Why are they changing?
Oh, well.
Oh, yes.
Do you know, Raina?
I read the article that they talked about it in. No, I'm just, oh, yes, because I'm excited for more Star Trek. Are we all excited for more
it's
Star Trek?
It's been years since we've seen a Star Trek TV series, hasn't it?
Yes, and it's in the original canon. It's not in the new J.J. Abrams.
What's a canon?
So that's the laws that something follows.
Right.
So
there are laws.
There are laws. And what's really great is that we've got lots of women of colour in this series, and lots of Klingons who have actually very different foreheads again.
Because there's a story behind this, the Klingons' foreheads, isn't there?
There is. Like in
the divots above their eyes.
Divots?
Divots? I don't know.
Ridges. I think ridges. We use the word ridges.
Yes,
okay. Divots is a golf term.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend a Klingon.
And I know that Klingons are very anti-golf. So,
good on them.
Yeah.
Kapla?
Kapla.
Yeah, so, sorry, not allowed to swear on air.
That means success. So.
Oh, right.
Okay, okay, you're good. I don't speak that much Klingon, by the way. I'm not quite that nerdy. in the original series, the Klingons didn't have ridges. It wasn't until the Next Generation they decided, oh, we probably need to make them look a little bit different. So they made a bit of a joke in Deep Space Nine about it, or like, oh, you know, they didn't have ridges then, but they do now. Mm. And then they actually went on to explain it in Enterprise, and it was to do with a human-augmented retrovirus that infected the Klingons and gave them flat foreheads, and they eventually got their ridges back. So, yeah.
Sounds a little bit like Independence Day and the virus.
Possibly.
But what's the story now?
So the story now is that the ridges have extra sensory receptors in them, probably for hunting and apex predator purposes.
Right. Mm. So they can detect their prey.
They can, yes.
Now, this new series is called Star Trek Discovery, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. Yes. And it's set before the events of the original Star Trek series and after the events of Enterprise. So it's sort of in the middle there.
Right, okay, because Enterprise was the one well before the original Star Trek.
Yeah, yes. Enterprise, the original model of exploring space was called Enterprise, which they failed to mention until they made the Enterprise series.
We need a timeline.
I'm sure that we can find one. I don't think that would be particularly hard.
There's probably a wiki sign out there for Star Trek, entirely dedicated to every...
Now, of course, somebody out there who sort of comes up with good ideas said, well, why would you pierce your forehead ridges if they contain extrasensory receptors? That just sounds really painful and stupid.
Maybe it's like an antenna.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, this is the thing. It's extrasensory, well,
maybe,
isn't
maybe
it?
Maybe it's like our ears.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it's like our ears. The bits that they're piercing aren't the bits that do the actual sensing, maybe.
They're just the bits that make them look pretty.
We should get a Klingon in the studio. The
The that can actually probably be arranged, you know.
Well, the trouble's going to be is that in the new series, I believe, the Klingons, when they talk, they actually talk Klingon, and there's subtitles underneath in English.
Which they actually did in Enterprise as well. So
it's not so new.
It's not so new. I have watched every single episode of Star Trek because I am that nerdy. But it's great. I love the whole concept of not thinking that the whole of the galaxy speaks English, which they explain well enough in Star Trek, and Doctor Who explain it very well.
What, Universal Translator?
Universal Translator in Star Trek, and it's a gift of the TARDIS in Doctor Who to allow you to speak everything, which...
leads us on to the next interesting story.
Now, anybody who's worth their weight in nerd is going to know this, but I am so super excited that a female is finally going to be playing the role of Doctor.
Where's the first female in the 54-year history?
Where's the applause?
Okay. Manual applause.
It was considered way back in after Tom Baker, they were actually considering put a female, because during Tom Baker's time, they actually did have a female Time Lord as his companion, Romana Achavotalunda.
I remember Romana, yes.
And so she actually went on to marry one of the actresses who played Tom Baker, and Lala Ward got married. So two Time Lords got married.
They'd have interesting children.
Yes, definitely. So how do you, Raina, are you a Doctor Who fan?
I have been a Doctor Who fan. I'll be honest with you, I've kind of dropped out of new Doctor Who in the last few years. I know this is controversial.
No.
I just find the storylines to be really a little bit too self-referential, a little bit too tedious, but I am really excited that there's going to be some new production and writing staff as well.
Did you watch any of the new companion who is a female of colour and lesbian?
I love her.
She's amazing.
But
Bill.
I'll have to play some catch up. I don't know. Just couldn't make time for Doctor Who, which is terrible.
Oh, look, no, it's actually understandable.
I feel terrible even saying so.
It really lacks some representation for people, for women, I think. And they've had the companions, but it's been the companions rather than the actual lead. So I think this is going to get a whole new fan base that we've been missing.
And Jodie Whittaker is a primo actress. She's super good.
I actually have only seen her in Starlink so long ago that I have to go back and watch it again to remember her. But she's in Broadchurch.
Yes.
And Attack the Block is the one that I've seen. So, I am so excited that I am excited.
There's a very short teaser trailer out there from the BBC about her where she approaches the TARDIS and she gets the key to the TARDIS. It's interesting. It's good to watch.
Yeah, so she'll be coming in at the Christmas special.
Into Joy.
I wish. she'll be coming into Doctor Who at the Christmas special, and the new showrunner, Chernobyl, can't think of his name off the top of my head, Chernobyl maybe, it will be taking over the directing at that point in the episode.
Right.
Otherwise, it's taking over the show running at that point in the episode, and Stephen Moffat will be doing it up until then. So that means we'll actually have three Doctors in the Christmas special.
How many Doctors have been on air in the same place at the same time?
The most has been five, although technically one was caught in the time vortex at the time.
I thought you were going to say he was.
Okay. There has been a couple of on-screen shots with all the Doctors.
Yeah.
But,
So, Doctor Who.
Apart from Doctor Who, quick poll. Like, what are sci-fi TV shows that we're watching at the moment or have watched recently? What's on your list?
I don't know if this kind of counts. I feel like it should count. I've been watching Twin Peaks.
Okay. It counts as nuts. So I think
it
that's close enough.
It counts as absolutely crazy. Yeah. It's very, very hard to follow. I think I would give it more of a horror sort of classic.
It definitely comes into horror, which actually horror is definitely another avenue that we'll be taking on the show. So I think, that's fine.
We don't discriminate against horror.
No, horror's great. I'm a big horror fan. So
personally, I'm not. But
I hate surprises.
Well, I look forward to that then. I've been watching another female-led show called Killjoys, which is really great. It's just a show about intergalactic bounty hunters such a complex mythology and to it that it's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, right. One of the ones I've picked up on is Clever Man, which is
fantastic.
Two series have been released. A very short series, and I'm kind of a bit bummed about that, but second series has finished, which is sort of this mashup of a bit of sci-fi, sort of kind of in the future, but it's definitely an Australian.
It's a very near based, future.
Yeah, near future. And there's a lot of Aboriginal mythology. Is that what they refer to?
It brings into. We probably wouldn't use it. There's two Aboriginal dreamings that come into it.
Right.
One is about the hairy. I can't think of the right word. So
Hairy men.
Yeah, and also the clever man who is an actual Aboriginal superhero.
So. Yeah, and they've turned that into a superhero character who, saves the world.
Absolutely. Or at least,
I've seen a few of those episodes, and they're really, really interesting.
Yes,
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah,
indeed.
Yes.
All right. So let's get off the sci-fi thing and move on to a little bit of eye rolling.
Hey, yes, that's actually a really good implementation of this. So one of the things that we picked up on in this week's worth of news was eye tracking software. Now, many, many years ago, I did an interview with a lady from Urawa. And they were showing their technology around making computers accessible.
Yep.
And one of the pieces of technology that was part of that was a very expensive setup of a desktop computer with a camera that was super sensitive, and it could look at your eyes and figure out where your eyes were looking at the screen.
Mm.
And I've seen these kinds of setups as well, and you may have seen this type of thing, Rainer, in your work, but when testing is done with website design or accessibility design, often the big companies like Nielsen and so forth will have a setup where they track your eyes, or they track the survey participants' eyes anyway, so that they can determine what's picking up your attraction. On what's attracting you on the screen. And what's just been announced in the last couple of weeks is Windows 10 will have this built into the operating system. So there's still a need, I believe, for a specific type of camera.
Yeah, there's a small range of cameras that will work with this.
But I think it's one of those things where technology is suddenly becoming really affordable, really, like, for this type of stuff to be more mainstream. Whereas, you know, before it might have cost $4,000 or $5,000 for a PC to be set up with this type of stuff.
So will the mouse follow my eyes?
That's a theory, yeah. Or perhaps it will do away with the concept of a mouse entirely and perhaps...
And a keyboard even.
And potentially, you know, you look at something and you blink. And
so I'll be double blinking instead of double clicking.
Possibly.
Yeah.
If you've got that much control. But you'd have, like, it's an interesting concept because, blinking is a subconscious thing you do, isn't it?
Yeah, so, how do you differentiate between a blink that's just because you blinked or a blink that's because you want to take control?
Could you give your camera a cheeky wink? Hey, camera.
Right now, my Windows 10 computer has facial recognition, which requires me to look directly at the camera when I'm trying to log into it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for it to unlock and...
To unlock,
and how well does that work?
It works really, really well. I mean, you have to be centred and you have to be looking dead on.
What happens if I come up with a photo of Mark Pounding?
And this is the thing. So one of the capabilities that's... there's very specific types of cameras that have to be embedded in the machine you're using. Surface Books and a lot of the Dells have them. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of
my Acer has it too.
Right. But there's an infrared component to it that enables some 3D sensing, so it doesn't just respond to a picture.
So the Mark Pounding mask would painful mask.
Possibly, yes. The 3D
available
printers.
At all good home stores.
I thought you got rid of that, Michael. But yeah, so it's an interesting sort of concept because Apple are actually talking about using this type of technology to make things more accessible. But you wonder what the adverse effects of this type of technology being available is. Like, will our eye movements be tracked while we're browsing websites and advertisers? Will they be taking that information in the future?
And I think the answer is going to be absolutely yes.
Well, person likes underwear.
Well, wouldn't you if you were an advertiser and you've got all this information available to you?
Already web designers have tools available to them to track, you know, where mouse cursors are positioned and what's being
clicked. How long they stay there,
etc. And where you're sitting on a page, like how far down the page you've scrolled and that sort of thing. So it's not unheard of to take it to the next level. But It'll be interesting to see how the technology companies include this in their products because, for example, I'd imagine if Apple did it, they'd be very keen to promote the privacy controls that are associated to it because they're usually very good at that, particularly, just like whether an app can access your contacts or that sort of thing is something.
And we all know how well that always goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and oftentimes I think the thing that app developers and web developers do these days is they make it a killer feature of their app to force you to turn on location services, for example, in order for you to use it properly.
Yes, well, the incentive.
Wasn't that the big kerfuffle with things like FaceApp and I suppose, the Instagram filters, the Snapchat filters and stuff, all of the ones that rely on your face being visible.
Yeah.
That they might actually been they might have actually been gathering a whole lot of interesting face recognition data from that.
Yes, yes. You know. Very scary times. Always need to keep on top of how our information is being used.
Scary times are great because I work in with the horror. You are coming back shortly to wrap up. This is Geeks Out on Joy.
This is Geeks Out here on Joy 94.9 with Michael Rayner, Clayton, and Mark.
Can't hear someone.
Yeah, I think we've got that.
Oh, how about that? Oops.
Clayton was
technology
for just one moment there.
It's probably a good thing.
It's our first show. We're learning. It's on our plates or whatever. We have come towards the end of the show
again. Yeah, so quickly.
But we thought we'd mention next week. There's a couple of interesting things coming up. So Terminator 2 3D is being Terminator 2 is being re-released in a 3D version.
Yes,
so that's Terminator 6D.
And
Mark and I got along to see that, so
we'll have a bit of a review of that, which is kind of exciting.
I'm so excited
and
to hear about
look,
it.
Sorry, Raina. Having a look at how it actually connects to what's happening in the world right now.
Yes. So. And also, the Tech and Gadgets Expo here in Melbourne is arriving, so...
Yeah, we're hoping to have somebody on this week, but unfortunately that didn't work out, so we'll be visiting that next week as well.
Indeed, yes. Thanks for listening to our first episode of Geeks Out on Joy. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Facebook. Search for Geeks Out Joy 949. And hopefully in less than an hour or so, you'll be able to search for us on Twitter as well. The same Twitter handle, Geeks Out.
Are you experiencing some technological issues?
Oh, I just didn't get to change the password. coming up next is the 5 o'clock news bulletin with Alex. And straight after that, we have Youth in Control with Charlie and Tom. Thanks for joining us from all the way from Wellington, Raina. It's been great having you
it's
on.
A long way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's good to have you fly back now.
Yes.
Yes, you've done your job. Come back. Come home.
Thanks, of course, to Michael for doing all the panelling and technical stuff.
Thank you. I've enjoyed pushing buttons as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And you only got one wrong. That's not bad.
Hang on. The show's not over yet. Do not underestimate.
And Clayton, of course, thank you for joining us too and providing us a sci-fi insight.
Well, thank you. And just quickly before we move on, hey, you mob, great show. Loved it. Chris T, who's our program manager.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks. And thank you, Mark, for your work this evening.
No worries.
This afternoon. Getting a bit carried away. Well, it's already getting dark out there.
It is, yes. Melbourne weather. It's looking a bit grey and destitute.
That's Melbourne.
Yes. But yeah, see you next week.
Indeed. Bye-bye.
See you.
out on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.